Case number 13-7196, Wilma Eli v. District of Columbia, Appellant. Mr. Love for the appellant, Ms. Satirica for the appellee.
Good
Let's wait till the courtroom clears. All right. Mr. Love, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. Richard Love for the District of Columbia. I would ask for 3 minutes for rebuttal. In light of the significantly lower rates that are awarded in the large number of IDEA cases identified in this record, the enhanced LAFI rate of $625 an hour is not required to attract competent counsel, and the enhanced LAFI matrix is not a reasonable measure of market rates in IDEA cases. If you look under either the applicable case authority, if you look under IDEA, and if you look under the facts of the case, either individually and certainly in totality, it's clear that Ms. Ely was required but failed to produce evidence that the rate she requested was in line with the prevailing district rate for IDEA cases and necessary to attract competent counsel. This court, for example, under applicable case authority, this court in National Association of Concerned Veterans versus the Secretary of Defense required fee applicants, and I quote, to provide specific evidence of the prevailing community rate for the type of work for which a fee award is sought. There's no dispute the type of work here is IDEA litigation services. If you look under IDEA, it's a very specialized statute. It requires a number of procedural requirements, and it authorizes district courts in its discretion to award fees to a parent that prevails in an IDEA action, and then only at the prevailing local rate for the kind of services that are furnished. The only kind of services that are going to be furnished in an IDEA case are going to be IDEA litigation services. So we think that the statute also provides authority.
The kind and quality language is exactly the same as the kind and quality language in the Equal Justice Act.
It is, Your Honor.
It's not unusual.
It is not.
And hasn't the Supreme Court at least indicated that all these fee-shifting statutes, regardless of little nuances in the language, ought to be interpreted the same?
And we're not suggesting that there's different case authority that's applicable. I mean, we believe the, you know, line of cases that have been cited interpreting fee-shifting statutes are equally applicable here. What we're saying is that it's appropriate to define the market here as IDEA litigation services for a number of reasons, of one of which is the IDEA statute itself, but beyond the IDEA statute, beyond case authority. I think if you look at the facts of this case, that supports that notion as well. For example, in this court, Save Our Cumberland Mountains opinion, it found that the rate should be commensurate with the prevailing community rate, and again, I quote, for attorneys of like expertise doing the same sort of work in the same area. And it's undisputed, if you look at the attorney's verified statement in this case, the expertise and the sort of work that was done here is undisputably special education law, IDEA litigation services. And if you look beyond...
So you're not asking for LAFI. You're saying LAFI, enhanced LAFI, neither of those is good.
No. We're saying that enhanced LAFI exceeds the market rate as identified in in the numerous, is probably between both parties cited.
Right, so enhanced Laffey. What about Laffey?
The United States Attorney's Office, Laffey Matrix. Well, we think that sets the market. And there's a variety of opinions that move up and down the U.S. Attorney's Office Laffey scale. But even at the height of the Laffey scale, it's $445 an hour. That's $180 less than the an hour, less than
but
the
why do you think that's okay as a reflection of IDEA cases and not enhanced Laffey as a reflection of IDEA cases?
Well, because the only evidence of a market rate that's tied to IDEA cases in this record are the probably close to 50 or so district court cases, not a single one of which awarded the enhanced Laffey rate. In fact,
isn't that pretty circular? Because if you go back to the first of those district court cases, it then determines Laffey, not enhanced Laffey, and then, but was that correct? I mean, are we bound at some point? Does that set the market that a few district courts have done it in a particular way?
I think on this record it does. There's no other evidence in this record of a market rate for these kinds of services that exceeds the maximum of the United States Attorney's Laffey Matrix rate, which is $445, at least $180 less.
Are these cases generally handled on a, do we know, is there any indication, are they generally handled on a kind of quasi-contingent basis? You pay my fees only if I prevail, and if I do prevail, I'll collect from the District of Columbia government?
There's no evidence in the record. I don't know.
See, the reason I'm asking that, I'm wondering about whether these 40 or 50 cases that you cite, that's the market right there. Because these attorneys that are handling these cases are not generally collecting fees when they lose from the client. They're collecting fees only when they win, and when they do win, they collect the fees from the District of Columbia government. And so all we have to do is just look at the average rate that was awarded by the district courts.
I think on this record that's absolutely correct. I mean, I can only surmise.
But keep going. Sorry, I interrupted.
I can only surmise. There's nothing in this record in terms of whether or not individual IDEA lawyers collect anything if they lose.
Okay. How is the first district court supposed to have made the decision?
Well, I think the first district court, it depends on the record. I mean, if in the record they're submitted affidavits from other attorneys who in IDEA cases received rates either equal to or above the maximum of the United States Laffey, that could be considered. But in this record, that
doesn't exist.
But going
to Judge Randolph's question, it's possible, I suppose, in these kinds of cases that they're not collecting fees if they're not prevailing. And so there'd be no way to really determine a market. Or is that not right?
Well, I think I'm not sure I understood the question, but I mean, on this record, I think the market is determined.
Going back to the hypothetical of the first district courts facing this issue, what fees are reasonable? And so you don't have a body of prior district court cases to look at.
Right.
And you look at the market, but it turns out in IDEA cases, and I don't know if this is true or not, but if the cases don't prevail, they're not collecting fees.
Well,
then you don't really have much to look at.
It's the fee applicant's burden to produce evidence to justify the rate. And that can be done in a number of different ways. So it would even on the first case, if there's no district court precedent, it would depend on, but it'd be incumbent upon the fee applicant to justify the fee, either through affidavits from other attorneys or however they seek appropriate with the applicable case authority to justify.
If the choice is just between Laffey and enhanced Laffey, why follow, maybe I'm loading the dice by calling one enhanced, but anyway, that's the term, just you know what I'm referring to. I don't mean to lower the dice by referring to it that way, but why would we use an all-items CPI rather than a more targeted index that's targeted to legal services?
Well, because I think what essentially
food and
that's
housing
irrelevant
prices?
For, you know, it avoids the central question in this case. And it's not what is the more appropriate method of measuring inflation. What we're saying is that sort of obscures the central question.
Which
the central question, is it $445 or is it $625? That's the market rate in an IDEA case.
Okay.
and we think on this record in particular.
But can you answer my question, which is just if we have the choice between those two and it goes back to the original Laffey matrix, why would you use an inflation index that's not targeted to legal services but that includes housing, food, et cetera, which really have nothing to do with the market and legal services?
I don't know how to answer it any differently than it's really, regardless of how you measure inflation, it still comes down to, is the market, you know, X dollars or X dollars? And I think on this record, the X dollars, the maximum of the X dollars is the U.S. Attorney's Laffey matrix of $445.
Do you accept this Laffey matrix?
Well, I think it's...
Let me ask you a different question.
Sure.
Put it differently. Are there any cases that have rejected this or questioned it? The premise of the Laffey matrix I think, open to doubt.
There are.
The premise is that the longer you practice law, the more valuable an attorney you are. And I'm not sure that that's true.
Well, this court has called it, you know, a crude kind of device. It lumps attorneys into these large categories. And there are, in the array of district court cases that have been identified in this record, some courts have found it inapplicable. And they've identified a different rate. Some have applied a DCPS guideline rate, which...
What's the rate that appointed counsel get in criminal cases?
It's in our brief, in a footnote. I think it's 125, something like that, in this court. So, I mean, there is some context, and this rate is totally out of context. But I think that, we also have to look
at... What's our standard of review?
Well, we think it's kind of a mixed question. I mean, I think the district court missed a step here in determining what is the market, what's necessary to attract competent counsel. And that's a point I think I've neglected a little bit. I think it's also, in this court, the Supreme Court in Delaware Valley said that a fee should only be as large as necessary to attract competent counsel. And just as we think on this record, you can't say that the market is $625 an hour when not a single case has been identified in which that rate has been employed in an IDEA case, and the rate at its most is at least $180 less. I think similarly, it can't be...
But how do we know if the answer to the question... I'm sorry to interrupt. So how do we know if the answer to the question you just posed is $150 an hour?
Well, you don't. And I'm not saying, there's a range, and we're talking about where does the court abuse its discretion if that's the appropriate standard, and we would think it's above the maximum rate in the U.S. Attorney's Laffey matrix, because that's the top rate of any of these cases that have been identified in this record that have been awarded in an IDEA case.
And the premise of Laffey was that it was complex litigation, right?
That's right, and that's why courts have moved up and down that scale, but no higher that. And
do you think this is not complex litigation?
This case?
No, this kind of case, IDEA cases.
I think it's clearly distinguishable from the type of litigation on which the Laffey matrix was formulated. If you look at Laffey, I mean, Laffey was a complex employment discrimination case. Typically, that was tried. There was numerous plaintiffs. There were, discovery, motions. Typically, well, in this case here, there was an administrative hearing one day. I think there were four witnesses, seven exhibits, and the case went to district court basically on a record review. There was no additional, there was no discovery, there was no additional evidence submitted to the district court, and it was decided.
Well, so therefore, there were not that many hours in question. I mean, that doesn't the number of hours take into account
that? It could be, but I don't think that's necessarily always true. A counsel could be inefficient. They could raise lots of issues and waste a lot of time on things that aren't particularly relevant. It could be true, but I think it also could not be true.
Go ahead.
What's the number you're drawing out of this Lappy matrix?
Well, our point simply is the top.
No. What's the hourly rate?
$445 an hour for an attorney with this many years of experience is the most that has ever been awarded in any of the district court IDEA cases cited in this record.
Am I looking at the wrong matrix? I'm at JA-96.
Yeah, I think you probably are, because in the deferred appendix is only the enhanced Lappy matrix. We cited to the Lappy, the U.S. Attorney's Lappy matrix, and identified the electronic.
The one on JA-96 is the enhanced one?
Yes. And there is some confusion, of course, with the term Lappy and the U.S. Attorney's Lappy matrix and the updated Lappy matrix, which is not the enhanced Lappy matrix, and then the enhanced Lappy matrix. But the exhibit on JA-96 is the enhanced Lappy matrix. And the amount there under 11 to 19 years in the top, $625, is what was awarded here. So we believe that rate, $625.
Well, that wouldn't be correct either. Don't you measure the rate from the time that the proceeding occurred?
That's right. And that's another error.
The proceeding occurred when?
I think between 11 and 12 or 10 and 12. 11. Well, but earlier than 2013, the court, and we did not raise this in our brief, but the court did, I think, inappropriately award current rates when it should have awarded historical rates. I think the court is correct. But in any case, the $625 an hour cannot reasonably represent the prevailing district rate in IDEA cases or be necessary to attract competent counsel when no other district court awarded more than $425 an hour. Many have awarded three-quarters of that amount, and Ms. Ely has presented no evidence that district lawyers in IDEA cases commonly, indeed ever, received the rate that was awarded here. For that reason, we believe the district
court... I'm going to ask a variation of something I've asked before, but suppose the first case had been awarded, as you think it should be, 445 or whatever, 445, and had been appealed, and you had come up here and said, well, no district court's ever awarded 445 before, and that. I mean, why did?
I think it's.
It just seems like we're at sea here.
I think the way the court structured this in Covington is, it recognized that evidence of recent fee awards can be used to support or challenge the reasonable hourly rate, and. You know, sure, the first case it would be...
The idea of a reasonable hourly rate, though, seems to me to be market, looking to a market, and yet we're not looking to a market. We're looking to court awards.
But I think this court said in Covington, clearly, that the awards can be looked at to determine the market.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just the logic of all of this is...
Well, I understand.
Mr. Love, before you sit down, will you address the argument that your opponent raises that you never made this argument in the district court?
Yeah. I think if you look at the record at JA 131 to 132, in the district's opposition to the plaintiff's motion for fees, Ms. Ely's argued that enhanced Lappy's rates... the district said that Ms. Ely's position that the enhanced Lappy rates comport with prevailing community rates, and I quote, takes no notice of the decisions in this jurisdiction ordering three-quarters of the Lappy rate or less than the LAFI rate for work completed in IDEA cases. And then after identifying those cases and other contrary evidence, the district argued, and again I quote, that it had set forth multiple sources that demonstrate that the rate does not accord with prevailing rates in the community for similar services by lawyers possessing similar skill, experience, and reputation. I think we squarely raised this argument in the district's opposition papers. So I think it was not waived, forfeited.
Okay, and the other thing, if a parent can't afford an attorney, the court appoints an attorney in these cases?
Not in this court. Sometimes in the Superior Court, they do have a panel of special education attorneys that are appointed sometimes in delinquency or child neglect cases.
What do they get an hour?
$90 an hour, but it is win or lose, but not in this court. At any rate, we believe that the court erred by not by entering an award far above market rate, not reducing it, as in fact IDEA requires. When it exceeds the prevailing community rate, we would ask the court to reverse and remand for the district court to enter an award that comports with that market rate in IDEA cases.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Turca.
May I please the court? Good morning. Douglas Turca, counsel for Ms. Ely. I'd like to start with a few small points. First, regarding the panel when attorneys are court appointed in neglect cases, I don't do any of that work. My understanding is that, yes, that rate is paid win or lose, and perhaps more importantly, it's used as kind of a backup rate. I think those orders are usually crafted such that the court instructs the appointed attorney to seek fees from the district if the attorney prevails, and otherwise they charge the $90 an hour to the Superior Court. Regarding the small question of the use of the current rates raised by Your Honor, as counsel acknowledged, that was not appealed here. Not only was it not appealed here, it was not contested in the court below. That's a discretionary matter for the court to accommodate delay in payment after the work. So current rates were used on the request of Ms. Ely. The district did not object at that time or before this court. I would like to address what can seem like a small point, and with respect to Your Honor, the question of loading the dice by calling this enhanced. And I know this seems like maybe a minor semantical point, but this has been part of a long-term strategy by the district to slant the judge of the district court, I think.
Right. In using the terminology, I take your point. So I was just using that terminology, but they're both neutral to me.
I'll refer to Amiki. Yeah. Amiki were especially concerned about the issue of the inflation adjustment. That was also part of our case before the district court. And this court has specifically recommended that LAFI matrices be adjusted for inflation. So the only question is how they are adjusted for inflation.
The thing that, $625 an hour, if you do 2,000 hours a year, is $1.3 million. And that seems high.
That's a fair question, Your Honor, and I can understand why that number might stick in one's craw. However, I think that's leaving out a lot of factors. I'm not here to testify, but I can tell you I don't know anybody getting rich off this. In fact, I don't know anybody supporting a family on this. I'm not doing that.
Right.
Because
you're not filling out, then there are cases that don't come up winners, but I don't think we can factor that in to this.
Well, I think the court can factor that in if the court takes the approach the district is asking the court to take. There's no contingency multiplier, and we're not asking for one. We're asking for market rates set through a certain system. The district is trying to shortcut that process of how to determine the market rate and to focus only on the one question from Purdue, which is this sufficient to attract competent counsel? Purdue mentioned that is the point of a fee award. I think almost every case making a fee award has made that observation. But Purdue did not throw out all the case law that makes that process possible and consistent for the courts. If the district and if this court chooses to focus on that question, then I think we do have to ask, will this rate, in fact, attract competent counsel?
I don't think we have any clue. We don't have a clue. No one has a clue.
At this point, we don't.
We certainly don't. I don't.
Well, who attracted you? Your affidavit says 95% of your practice has been in the field of special education law. Now, I heard you say you don't make a living off of these hearings, but you also said you've litigated over 1,000 IDEA administrative cases and 20 IDEA federal cases. Over what period of time?
Since 2003, I've been specializing in IDEA work. And I think that's an important point with looking over some of these recent district court decisions. First off, I would ask the court, if there is a review of those district court decisions, that the court look to JA 151 to 54, which gives a much better overview of what's going on in these cases, and including the fact that 18 of them are, in fact, identical cases from the same judge. But to address the issue,
I just want to ask you, if you make 95% of your practice is IDEA, or is it not? Are you doing other special education work? Because that sounds to me as if, yes, you do make your living from these cases.
And I appreciate the question, Your Honor, and if I may address it directly. What has occurred in the special education world in this jurisdiction, there's been a gigantic upheaval in the last few years. Prior to 2008, the relationship about billing with the District of Columbia was fairly amicable. Well, there were two main changes. First off, up to that point, the win rate for parent attorneys, at least as far as I knew and what I saw in my firm, was 90 to 95%. That was primarily because the district did not bother to contest cases where it knew it was wrong. So cases could be done quickly. They were done under the fee cap, and they had that kind of success rate. Billing, as far as I know by everybody, was accomplished in the same way. We sent our bills to the district. The district would send back some proposed payment, or the district would send a proposed lump settlement agreement, and that we have one of those in this record. At that time, the district was paying at least my bills, paying them at 100% or at some number rounded down to just a round number, as it did in the settlement in this case, where it rounded, I think it was 90,000 and changed down to 90,000. And so that was the consistent system. On October 1st, 2008, and this is, I have this on a deposition, the district decided that it would not do any more settlements of attorney's fees. It also stopped paying attorney's fees. And that is why, since that time, we've had an explosion of fee litigation at the district court. So now what has to happen is that for every, if you want payment, we have to be in the situation exactly we're in here, which is I'm right now arguing for money for work that I did 5 years ago. And I'm arguing for the money only for the work that in which I prevailed. And, of course, we get paid only for those prevailing theories. So it's not just prevailing in the case, but prevailing only in the theory. So at this point, we're looking at a situation where, first, if you're getting paid for 50% of your billable work, I consider that a good result. And then, of course, if you're a small practitioner, you are not spending all of your time on billable work. It's a much smaller fraction of this. I can say that I use, for my estimates, I use one quarter of what the hourly rate to get to my actual rate. Now, if we take one quarter of 625, we're still at what seems like a big number. But we're looking at, if you had a 40-hour work week at that number, sorry, I've done the math before I came in here, but it comes out to about $350,000 per year. Now, that's a nice salary. That would attract a lot of people. We're talking about, though, at the top of the class, as counsel observed, people who are down in the 1 to 3 bracket are making something half that. We're talking about no benefits. We're talking about the overhead of running a small firm. Even if you're, you know, at minimal expenses, you have to carry those expenses. And, again, we're talking about living in a world of great uncertainty and with a major delay in payment. If an IDEA practitioner starts an administrative case today, at a minimum, they are not, assuming they win, they prevail on every issue, at a minimum, they are not getting paid for a year and a half to 2 years. That's the process. So,
did I hear you correctly? You only get paid if you win?
If you are representing poor clients, yes.
Yeah, so it's contingents.
Essentially, it's contingent, yeah. So in that world, and because these decisions from the district court are recent, we haven't seen all of the fallout from this new system yet, but there is evidence in the record about what has occurred. And we cited in our brief and in our filings below the Thomas VDC decision that talks about what the court called a disgraceful state of affairs. That was based on uncontested evidence from the plaintiff, who I represented in that case, of the devastation that occurred in the parents' attorney bar starting at that time in 2008-2009. prior to 2009, my firm or myself, we were litigating literally more than 200 cases per year for the period 2004 through 2008 inclusive. Last year, I filed, I think, fewer than 5 cases, definitely fewer than 10, on behalf of parents who could not afford representation. There's been a similar change in other firms. The largest firm by far, who was doing 40% of IDEA administrative litigation, almost all of it for parents who could not afford representation, they cut their practice down by 80%, I believe. Again, all of that evidence was presented in Thomas VDC, which we cited. And the district,
I think you said that the cause of that was
the fact that DCPS both cut the rate it would willingly pay and stopped settling and stopped paying. So what happened was the rate was cut, but then also all of a sudden you had a huge delay. Mm-hmm. And you had to look to, and I can attest to exactly the effect of it, because in the early 2009, a few months after they instituted this policy on October 1st, 2008, I shut my firm's doors. I fired an associate and 4 other employees, and I've been essentially on my own with part-time help since then. I'm not asking for the court's pity. I'm reporting what the reality is of whether this is attracting counsel.
Now, on the standard of review, to go there, I think you say it should be abuse of discretion.
I think this court has been very clear that it's abuse of discretion.
So if the district court here had awarded the other Laffey, I'll call it, would that have been an abuse of discretion?
Well, I have had to ask myself that question. I was counsel in some of the cases that we're talking about here. And sometimes it's been a tougher call than others about whether I would bring that case up. And, of course, sometimes it's the client's call more than mine. Mm-hmm. I think that it would, in this case, have been an abuse of discretion, because in this case, there was no evidence presented to the court on which to make a determination of how to adjust the Laffey matrix for inflation, other than the evidence presented by the plaintiff, which was expert testimony. And then the court, of course, cited all these other sources. It continues to be the case that the district has not cited any additional evidence for a different method of inflation adjustment. And Amiki addressed this at length, and the district court did as well, in a very carefully considered opinion.
Because just to follow up, one possibility, if you prevail here, is that the court would say, well, it's not an abuse of discretion. It's up to the district court to go with Laffey A or Laffey B, which is an odd state of affairs in some respects, to say that district courts have this huge range for very similar cases. Maybe that's okay, though.
It would remain the messy situation that it now is, and I don't pretend that it's a very stable situation. It is true that when a parent files a fee case before the district court, they have no idea what the rate is going to be until the judge is assigned, and perhaps not even then. And yes, that makes for a messy situation, and one I'm sure this court would prefer not exist, and I'm sure the district court would prefer not exist. However, this court may make the determination that that's an issue for the legislature and not for this court. If this court is going to address that issue on this record, I don't think that the district has presented anything but a reason to accept a Laffey matrix as a measure of community rates, and to accept this method of adjusting the Laffey matrix for inflation, as this court has instructed be done. The district's main argument is that we need our own separate matrix for IDEA litigation. This court has explicitly rejected that argument in Covington, in which the court said, rejected an argument that it had to be broken down by a statutory scheme. And additionally, since Laffey itself, the court has used Laffey in a whole range of cases that I mentioned in the brief, Equal Access to Justice Act, as Judge Randolph mentioned, 1988, Laffey itself was Title VII, and even the Surface Mining Control and Reclamation Act in Cumberland Mountains.
Which I guess the response to that would be the statutory language here seems a little more tightly drawn to this kind of case.
Well, in fact, the Surface Mining Act and as Judge Randolph observed, the Equal Access to Justice Act now match the same language. I think the only reason that is because the IDEA has been amended for other reasons since Bloom, and so is seeking to mirror the language that has been adopted by the courts with approval for that language. I don't think there's any evidence that there was an attempt to overturn the entire scheme.
The evidence before the magistrate and the district court, was there any evidence other than your practice, your billing practice?
Of market rates?
Right.
There was my billing practice, my affidavit regarding billing practice. There was my evidence regarding past settlements with the district, again, of my bills. And there was the reference to the Laffey matrix with the expert report and approval of it.
So
there's nothing
no.
at all from the district. So that specific contrary evidence that this court has demanded of the defendant in fee litigation was simply not produced.
But the answer is no. You didn't have affidavits from other.
No other affidavits. That was your
question.
No other. I'm sorry if I misunderstood.
Yeah.
Can I go back to, and I'm not, I don't mean to be picking on you, but you said you were paid 100% of whatever you requested before 08. Is that right?
Yes.
What was that rate?
That rate were rates. It wasn't exactly this number because it was an earlier year and I was lower on the matrix.
Rate?
It was exactly, I don't remember the number, Your Honor. It was exactly comporting, though, with this version of the Laffey matrix.
I mean, was it 300? Was it
400? In 2008, I can look up the matrix, but I believe the number was something like 450.
All right. So.
And please, I want to emphasize that I'm going by memory. But.
All right, but well, let's just take that then as a hypothetical. And the district is paying 100% of a $450 an hour rate and says we're not going to, in effect, we're not going to pay that anymore. We're not going to settle. We're going to contest it. Is that the state of affairs in 08?
Absolutely.
Based on your experience?
That is absolutely the state of affairs, and that is my conversation with many different parent attorneys. I mean, there's just no question about that whatsoever. And, again, the exposure of litigation in the district court, I think, would clearly exhibit it.
All right. Now, the 1,000 administrative cases that you handled, was that before 08?
The overwhelming majority of those were before 2008.
And how many have you handled since 08?
For clients who cannot afford representation or overall?
Well, for the fees that you're collecting from the district.
For collecting from the district, it's been fewer than 100 for sure.
All right.
All right, my time is up. Would Your Honor like me to find the numbers from the matrix? Or?
That's okay. Thank you.
If there are no further questions, we will ask that the court affirm.
All right. Does
Thank
Mr.
You.
Love have any time left? All right, why don't you take 2 minutes if you need them.
Very briefly, Your Honor, I just point out that the fee-shifting statute isn't to, enhance attorney's business. It's to ensure that a client can get competent counsel to prosecute these cases. We've cited, district court cases all the way up into 2013. So there's a continuing history of clients being at least able to get counsel to represent them in these types of cases. The second, I would point out, there's been some reference to the Equal Access to Justice Act and using the same language. Of course, the Equal Access to Justice Act has a soft cap of $125 an hour. And again, I want to emphasize that Ms. Ely, as the fee applicant, has the burden to introduce the evidence to support the rate that she's requesting. And the best, indeed, the only evidence in this record are the district court decisions. That is a recognized form of evidence by this court. In future cases, the district may introduce evidence to justify a lower rate. Plaintiffs may introduce evidence to support a higher rate. But on this record, the only evidence that's tied to IDEA and defines the market here is the district court decisions, which we think were appropriate evidence, were identified in opposition to the plaintiff's motion for fees, and were not taken into consideration by the district court in terms of establishing the market.
Do you agree the standard's abuse of discretion?
I think using an abuse of discretion standard would reach the same result. And the district court abused its discretion by discounting the only record evidence.
Well, my question was, do you agree that the proper standard of review in these kinds of cases is abuse of discretion?
Yes, unless it's an illegal issue,
right.
It would be an abuse of discretion.
You agree that attorney's fees that the counsel for the plaintiffs in the IDEA action is entitled to attorney's fees.
Yes, as a prevailing party, the statute provides that.
What is the rate that you would agree to?
Well, we think here the record only justifies a fee that would be at maximum $445 an hour. Beyond that, I think the court abuses its discretion in awarding.
Have you made that offer to your opponent?
I don't know. We haven't had any negotiations on the appellate level. I don't know what was done prior to the case moving forward and on appeal.
Would he be entitled to attorney's fees for this appeal?
If he prevails.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On the 445, I just go back to this. You're saying that's okay because that's Laffey, and you're saying 625 is not okay because that's, as you call it, enhanced Laffey. But the only difference between those two is the inflation index. Let me finish the question. Why is it an abuse of discretion to choose the one inflation index over the other when it seems like you can make decent arguments for both?
Sure. And I said because the market is defined by the record in this case only runs up to $445 an hour. There's no evidence. In fact, there's not a single IDEA case of 50 cases or so cited that approved an award of $625 an hour. So it simply can't on this record be supported that is a prevailing community rate for IDEA practitioners in the District of Columbia. And that's why we say on this record, the market as defined by this record has a ceiling of $445 an hour, regardless of whether how you measure inflation. The bottom line is, what does it take, to attract competent counsel, to establish the market rates? And here, it's the market rate is established by the only evidence, as I said, which is at least $180 an hour less than the rate that was awarded here. And that's why we believe it was an abuse of discretion to enter the award that was entered by the district court here.
Can I ask you one last question? And that is, Magistrate Judge Kaye used a rate for non-complex litigation and then cut it 25%.
That's
right. I just don't remember. Did you propose that in the district court? Did anybody argue for that?
I think we argued for an even lower rate, but when the district, when Magistrate Judge Kaye's report and recommendation came out at three-quarters of Laffey, we did not object to that.
Okay. Thank you,
Your Honor.